This is Market Insights, the Market Pulse podcast by Oanda.
I'm Johnny Hart. This is the Market Insights Market Pulse podcast. Let's join our guest for the day, Oanda financial writer Christian Norman in London, and in the United States, it is Trader Nick. Good afternoon, guys.
Hey, guys.
Great to be back.
Now, it's a big day today, actually, isn't it, Nick? Particularly for you, because we have waited so long for these non-farm payroll numbers, those US jobs numbers. It seems like another lifetime ago. And finally, we've got something. The first official data in weeks on the US job market is out because of that government shutdown. We've seen employers adding 119,000 jobs. Having said that, these figures go way back to September. Now, even though that they were more than double what many analysts had expected, and the unemployment rate ticked up from 4.3 to 4.4%, how relevant, Nick, are these figures, and how seriously have the markets taken them in terms of what's likely going to happen with a rate cut and so on? Because it does seem like a very long delay to really come to any conclusions after nearly 7 weeks.
Well, to put it bluntly, in a normal circumstance, this data would be antiquated and not that useful. But given a very unique circumstance right now with the upcoming December 10th Federal Reserve meeting, this data became more interesting. Let me explain. They recently, the BLS, actually updated its calendar for reporting the NFP report, this monthly jobs report. Usually, as listeners may know, the first Friday of each month is where we release new data, or the US BLS releases new employment data for the prior month. Well, they just updated two important critical things. The White House mentioned that we are likely not going to get an October jobs report. That is likely to go off into the void and into Never Never Land. Who knows what happened in October, and we may never know. On top of that, they also postponed the jobs release for November's data, which would usually come the first Friday of December. They pushed it back to December 16th. Now, remember the December 16th date, because remember what I said prior to that, the December 10th date is when the Fed meets. So if you're putting your puzzle together here, you may realize that we are not going to get another NFP report prior to the Fed making the very critical decision as to whether or not to cut interest rates and guide for more cuts, or hold rates steady and take more of a hawkish stance. Now, today's jobs data, just to reiterate, usually would not be exceptionally interesting. This is September's data. It's almost December now, so this is old news. But if it's all we're going to get in regards to an NFP report, it suddenly becomes our best educated guess for what the Fed is going to do. It's what we're all operating off of. Unemployment rate ticked up to 4.4%. Prior was 4.3. Forecast was 4.3. We also had a non-farm employment change of 119,000 added jobs to the economy. This was much higher than forecast of 53,000. So a pretty good jobs print, but unemployment rate rose. So we'd call this kind of a mixed report. At the same time, we got unemployment claims this morning, which also came in at that 220,000 figure compared to a slightly higher than higher forecast. So that was a good print. So average hourly earnings on a year-over-year basis were slightly upbeat. On a month-over-month basis, they were slightly downbeat. Point being, they were kind of mixed, and they don't give any sort of clear, decisive, the Fed should do this or the Fed should do that. In fact, the Fed Watch tool has pretty much remained unchanged from where it was the last few days. So that's all we've got to go off of, and we're counting down the days to a very important Fed decision.
Christian?
Well, you're quite right in saying it's a very mixed result for US jobs data today. Of course, we've all been waiting very keenly for some more information and insight, which obviously goes double for the Fed as well, who would have been very keen to see what the jobs market is looking like, even if we are dealing with September's data. Of course, we've had the information that October's release will not be coming. So also, we're considering before the shutdown happened, we're seeing a relatively strong footing in terms of added jobs for September. But it's also worth noting that it was a downwards revision in August as well. So a little bit of a mixed signal from the jobs data today. Of course, rising in employment, as you so expertly mentioned, Nick. But we'll certainly see what the Fed thinks of this in the next coming days and weeks ahead of that important decision.
Christian, I wanted to stay with you because yesterday we had the latest UK CPI numbers. And, well, they weren't too bad. And in fact, looking at some of the analysis around, many are predicting that it's leading a more likely interest rate cut in December from the Bank of England. And in fact, I think it's something like an 80% chance now in terms of a UK cut. What were your thoughts?
Well, I'll start by saying that inflation in the UK is still far too high by any real metric. We're still almost twice the 2% target of the Bank of England. With that being said, and in line with consensus, year-over-year inflation did fall to 3.6% in Wednesday's release, which will come as positive news for not only Andrew Bailey and the Bank of England, but also for Rachel Reeves ahead of that important budget in just a couple of days' time now, 5 or 6 days' time. Of course, that is some positive news and a positive spin they can take into the budget. But back onto the Bank of England, last time the room was quite split in terms of a rate cut. I think there's definitely some case or a use case for a rate cut here in the UK because our economy is showing struggling jobs growth. The jobs and the labour market is middling at best, weak otherwise. And of course, the economic growth has been really quite poor in the past few quarters. With that being said, this falling inflation rate, it backs up what the Bank of England was saying recently, that the 3.8% we've been so used to was the peak of inflation. And this kind of vindicates and proves that the Bank of England were right in saying that. Now inflation is being at least moving in the right direction. It opens the door for a line of thinking which supports that rate cut. So it's no surprise that the markets are predicting a much higher likelihood of rate cuts in that decision. But we'll have to wait and see. Like I say, if you consider the state of the jobs market and economic growth, there's definitely some utility in a rate cut at the moment in the UK.
And those numbers, have they affected sterling? I would imagine that it's dropped after that number.
Yeah, the British pound is lower here in the last few days. I mean, the British pound against the dollar has lost a good bit of value recently, going back to the highs in July at 1.3780, let's call it. We're now trading at 1.38. So, I'm sorry, 1.3087, just to clarify, continuing kind of its recent downtrend against the US dollar. There's a difficulty here because if the Fed is kind of in the process of pausing, or maybe not necessarily pausing, but just slowing their role on rate cuts, it's very different than a couple months ago. And I'm sure you guys remember that a few months ago on the podcast, we were talking about 100% rate cut probabilities for December. I mean, look at it now, it's somewhere around 40%. So from the dollar side, though, I think that adds even more downward pressure on an already kind of difficult circumstance for the UK. Inflation is high, but at the same time, growth is very slow. And it's this constant juggling we're seeing across central banks right now, where it's like, you know, central banks are trying to gauge this slow growth with still some remnants of inflation that has been sticky the last few years. It's a difficult time for the Bank of England. I think it is a more difficult circumstance by far than someplace like the US, where at least there's that growth story to go along with a bit of sticky inflation. Having no growth constantly is this badgering from, and we know politically this is very, very, you know, much the case. Politicians sort of always want rate cuts across all sorts of different jurisdictions. Like I know just in the US, many times in Congress, it always feels like everybody wants cuts to the interest rate. I can't imagine how loud that would be in my own country if inflation is problematic, so it's really hurting the case for rate cuts, but at the same time, growth was very stagnant. So it is certainly a difficult circumstance and I think puts pressure on the British pound.
I wanted to talk to both of you about the big story of the last 24 hours, and that is the US technology stocks surging after Nvidia reported better than expected chip sales, certainly reassuring investors about AI demand, because there are concerns of a bit of a bubble. But we've seen the NASDAQ, Nick, today really jump up.
Yes. And the last 48 hours have been very strong for U.S. stocks. We are seeing a little bit of softness here the following day after the NVIDIA report, at least at the time of recording. NASDAQ is actually lower on the day. But of course, given from the lows in the last few days, it's up quite a bit just from those low points. NVIDIA came out with very strong earnings. I don't think that surprised anyone because, again, the CEO, Jensen Huang, is incredibly, incredibly bullish on the technology. And sort of always comes out a bull on AI and spending and kind of their big customers still delivering strong demand for their chips. And so I don't think that there was a surprise there in Jensen's kind of the way he spoke. I listened to the earnings call, of course, saw the earnings report. Very solid beat in terms of revenue and net income for the company. And I think it sets a really important precedent for the AI trade. I mean, I saw a joke on Twitter here or X.com this morning, which was saying most Americans don't realize that their 401k was actually just saved by the NVIDIA CEO. Because, of course, NVIDIA makes up such a big component of U.S. stock market indices right now. I mean, it's over 8% of the S&P 500 is all parked in this one ginormous company. So, you know, we're seeing a little bit of softness come in after the print, but overall, I still think that it reiterated that there is still very strong spending and appetite for AI. And I think that that continues to be a tailwind for multiple facets. I think if you're just talking about U.S. tech stocks, of course, that's good for U.S. tech stocks. But let's talk about the broader implications for the global economy. This is doing something that I think is very under-talked about and very important. These ginormous, they call them the Mag 7 companies in the US, have been sitting on, for over a decade, ginormous piles of cash. And, you know, they've just sort of hoarded cash away for a very long time because they didn't know what to do with it. Microsoft, Google, these companies are very cash-rich companies. Well, now they finally have something to do with it. And those companies are spending a significant amount of money into the global financial system through this rollout of AI spend. So I think that that is both a good thing for tech stocks, but also it is an incredibly good thing for spurring growth across the U.S. economy and probably abroad. It gets exported. So just an interesting thing to watch, both from stock specific, but also the global economy.
What about your thoughts, Christian?
Well, it's no coincidence that the NASDAQ is moving in tandem almost with the likes of NVIDIA, the most valuable company in the US by market cap by some margin, which is, even in saying that, the past couple of years is incredible. If you consider the astronomic rise in stock price, we've got some other chip makers moving in tandem as well. Albeit the NASDAQ a little bit all over the place today, we are seeing some encouraging signs out of that NVIDIA earnings. And of course, the forward guidance as well. Very robust, if I can say so myself. So it's definitely an interesting space to keep an eye on, which I could have said for every day for the past 2 years, in all fairness.
Before I let you go, guys, we must talk Bitcoin, which is down again today, quite significantly, Nick.
I have to be careful how I approach this topic, Johnny, because there's a lot of young people who really love cryptocurrency. And cryptocurrency this year has been a drama, to say the very least. The year-to-date performance of Bitcoin, at one point, we were looking at 30% gains for the barometer of crypto, I would say, the placeholder, which is Bitcoin. We have now actually gone year-to-date negative on Bitcoin. Now, this has been an interesting time because if you were to ask me, okay, you have an administration that is incredibly bullish on cryptocurrency. You have a stock market that has an incredible rebound. You have so many reasons here where you would think logically Bitcoin and institutions getting involved in cryptocurrency. Perhaps, by the way, that might actually be part of the headwinds now. But you've seen this dramatic rise and dramatic crash here now in Bitcoin prices. I should say, when we were writing up the plan for the podcast today, Johnny, I mean, you've been doing this podcast for quite some time, longer than I have even. And you pointed out that this is not the first time we've seen such a dramatic fall, but Bitcoin's down 30% from its highs. We're trading under 90,000, which was a big psychological level I've seen all over the internet. And now, eyeing up, in my view, we could, we know how these things behave. Drawdowns in Bitcoin can be very sharp. It's not out of the question that you continue to see maybe a move back down to a very huge level of support around 75,000. Let's see what happens.
And Christian, final word to you.
Thank you very much. Well, I will say Bitcoin, crypto, it's something relatively new to the markets, as we all know. But one thing is for certain, it's at the forefront of that risk barometer of the market. As soon as things start to get a bit heated up, that's the first thing markets look to get rid of in terms of liquidations. And of course, now we've got institutional investment as well. That effect is almost compounded. So Bitcoin, technically, fundamentally, looking a little bit wobbly to say the least. So we'll have to see how this one pans out over the next couple of weeks.
Excellent stuff. Thank you very much, guys. We'll speak to you again very soon. Nick, I'll speak to you tomorrow.
Thanks, Johnny.
Thanks, guys.
Market Insights, the Market Pulse podcast by Oanda.